One of the challenges that you're likely going to have in retirement as you start to implement a tax strategy is you're going to ask yourself the question of what degree should I focus on and prioritize Roth conversions versus to what degree should I focus on and prioritize tax gain harvesting? This can be a tricky thing to juggle because both have tremendous benefits. And what we're going to do in today's episode of Ready for Retirement is to help walk through using a listener's actual situation. We're going to walk through an example to see how should you prioritize each. So let's jump right in. This is another episode of Ready for Retirement. I'm your host, James Canole, and I'm here to teach you how to get the most out of life with your money. And now, on to the episode. The listener question that we're going to be going over today comes from Drew. Drew says this. He says, here's the puzzle I'm trying to solve. Do I continue to sell stocks out of my non-retirement brokerage account, paying 15% on the capital gains, or do I spend more money out of my traditional IRA paying 22% and hope that I can control my income well enough in the future to take advantage of a 0% tax rate on ordinary capital gains? For reference, here's my situation. My annual living expenses are about $110,000. I have $2 million in a tax-deferred retirement account. I have $800,000 in a Roth IRA, $300,000 in a brokerage account, $11,000 per year in a pension, and Social Security coming someday. From Drew. So Drew, thank you very much for that question. I think this is a good example to use as we start to understand how do we prioritize various tax strategies in retirement. And it looks like Drew is specifically asking about tax gain harvesting because he asks, how does he keep a 0% tax rate on his long-term capital gains? So I'm going to take that question and also add on to it and talk about to what extent should we also be looking at things like Roth conversions. So Drew, we are going to look at your question, but we're going to add on top of it because this is a very common thing. Here's what I'll say before we jump in. This typically isn't a tremendous issue for someone that doesn't have a good amount of money in both IRAs and brokerage accounts. Now, what is a good amount of money? It's all relative, of course. But if someone has, say, $10,000 in an IRA and $10,000 in a brokerage account that's almost all gains, it doesn't really matter. There's not a lot of strategy needed. There's just not going to be much income tax generated regardless of what you do with those assets. Where it does become an issue is now you have several hundred thousand dollars, multiple millions of dollars in these types of accounts, because then the wrong strategy can cost you tens of thousands, hundreds of thousands, maybe even millions of dollars if you don't do things in the right way. So I just want to preface this. As you're going through this, if you're looking at your situation, you've got a couple hundred thousand, a few hundred thousand dollars of retirement assets, that's great, but this maybe isn't going to be the most applicable. There will absolutely be little nuggets that you can pull out of it, but this becomes a real challenge for people that have a lot of money in a brokerage account and have a lot of money in pre-tax retirement accounts. So if I were to jump right into this, here's what I would do first. So sometimes people want to jump right into the, okay, tell me what to do. What's the order of operations? What do I sell? What do I convert? Well, start with what do you want to use each asset for? And specifically, what do you want to use these brokerage assets for? So if I'm using Drew as an example, he has $300,000 in a brokerage account. Well, if after going through an exercise, Drew says, yeah, I do a lot of charitable giving, well, I'm going to use some of those brokerage assets probably for charitable giving. Now, it depends upon to what extent are there a lot of gains in this brokerage account. If he has $300,000 and he originally put in $290,000 to get to that $300,000, there's not a whole lot of gains. So I'm not as worried about tax consequences there. But if he put in $30,000 and now it's $300,000, now there's a significant amount of gains. And so if we determine that charitable giving is a big part of Drew's planning, well, I might prioritize using that brokerage account to say, let's gift these appreciated assets. And instead of giving the $5,000 per year, $10,000 per year, whatever the actual dollar amount is, instead of giving that in cash, why don't we gift that in shares or appreciated asset so that you don't pay any taxes and you still get the full deduction? Or maybe Drew comes back and says, you know what, that's really legacy money. This is money I inherited from my parents, and I want my children to ultimately inherit that. Okay, well, great. Let's not necessarily look to focus on or prioritize tax gain harvesting if this is money that you are going to keep growing and not really live on because you want to pass it to your children or other heirs. Now, one caveat to that is even in that situation, you'd want to make sure the brokerage account was invested the right way. If it was a horribly inappropriate or wildly risky allocation, well, then you're sacrificing those goals, or you're putting those goals at jeopardy because you might not get the growth that you want over time to pass those on to the next generation. So if it's charitable, if it's legacy money, I'm probably doing something totally different than if Drew says, no, that's money that I'm going to live on. That's money that I need to pull out, and I'm trying to prioritize how do I minimize the tax implications to do so in order to pull that money out the most effective way. I am assuming that that's where Drew is coming from. Based on his question, based upon the limited amounts that I know, it looks like Drew is taking this $300,000 and saying this is part of my retirement portfolio. How do I take it out the most effective way? And ideally, pay taxes at the 0% long-term capital gains rates, as opposed to the 15% or even 20%, which probably he wouldn't be paying those at based upon the income levels needed for that. But how do I pay taxes at 0% as opposed to 15% is the gist of his question. And now what I'm going to add on to that. So if his core question is, how can I be smart about this? How can I pay taxes at 0% versus 15% on long-term capital gains? What I'm adding on is, how do we balance that with potential Roth conversions? How do we balance that with spending down IRA assets now to avoid significant required distributions in the future? Here's what the analysis comes down to. If you have a large brokerage account, if you have a large IRA, like I said at the beginning, that's all relative. But if you have a large balance, what's going to save you more in taxes? Tax gain harvest benefits can be pretty significant. And if you're listening, you're wondering, what do I mean by tax gain harvesting? What I mean by this is there are three tax brackets for long-term capital gains. And this also, by the way, counts qualified dividends. So a qualified dividend and a long-term capital gain are taxed at either 0%, 15%, or 20% at the federal level. Now, states may tax that differently. There's net investment income tax on top of that. So there's other things that you could potentially pay on top of that. But the core federal long-term capital gain tax brackets are either 0%, 15%, or 20%. So those gains are based upon what's called your taxable income. And if your taxable income is under certain thresholds, then what tax gain harvesting is asking is it's saying, how can we on purpose realize gains, sell investments that have long-term capital gains up until this threshold, because we're going to pay zero taxes at the federal level on that before we move into the 15% tax bracket. So when we look at what are the benefits of tax gain harvesting, well, it could be the difference between paying taxes at a 0% tax rate or at a 15% tax rate. So that's a 15% savings. That's pretty significant if we can harvest gains in the lowest tax bracket, which of course is 0%. Now, let's hold that for a second. The tax benefit there is 15%, not on the entire amount that you sell, but on the amount of gains. Let's look at an example. If you sell $40,000 worth of an investment that you originally bought for $30,000, there's not a tax benefit on the full $40,000. The tax benefit is on the $10,000 of gains. But on that $10,000 of gains, you are getting a 15% benefit for realizing those at the 0% tax bracket versus the 15% tax bracket. Hold that in your mind. So 15%, that's the potential tax savings. Now let's look at the Roth conversion benefit. What's the Roth conversion benefit? And by the way, this doesn't have to be a Roth conversion. This could be what's the benefit of taking income from my IRA, say in one tax bracket today versus having to take income from my IRA in a tax bracket in the future. So the entire amount of that distribution is ordinary income. Unlike selling a stock, selling an investment, you're only paying taxes on the gains because you've already paid taxes on what you put in. Well, with an IRA distribution, that entire amount is taxable income. Well, what's the benefit of a Roth conversion? Let's use that as an example. It depends. If you're converting, say, today at the 12% tax bracket, and in the future, you expect to be in the 25% tax bracket, which is what the current 22% tax bracket is expected to be, or it's going to sunset to once current tax law expires, well, that's a 13% savings. So every dollar that you put in today, there's a 13% delta versus what that could be or what you would have saved had you had paid taxes instead at 25%. Now, of course, there's details to that because once that money is converted, it grows and there's all kinds of different ways to look at it. But just simply put, there's a 13% benefit for that. Versus what if you convert today at the 22% bracket and in the future, you're expected to be in the 28% tax bracket. Well, in that case, there's a 6% savings on any money that's converted today versus the future. This is kind of like tax arbitrage. Can we choose where to realize our income? So instead of realizing it at a 28% tax bracket, we realize it in a 22% tax bracket. So you look at those numbers and it kind of seems like tax gain harvesting wins, right? Instead of paying taxes at 15%, you could pay it at 0%. It's a 15% savings on all those dollars versus, and I just listed two examples out of dozens of possible examples, Maybe Roth conversion saves you 6% marginal taxes, 13% marginal taxes. That's true, and it certainly could be the case that tax gain harvesting wins, that tax gain harvesting puts more in your pocket in terms of tax savings. But here's the key difference. You will never be forced to sell your brokerage account. Now, you may sell it if you want to live on that money, of course. You may sell it if you need to use that money to do something different, but you're not going to be forced to sell it. Versus with an IRA, you are going to be forced to sell it. With any pre-tax accounts, there's going to come a time where you have to take required minimum distributions. In other words, you're going to be forced to sell and distribute a minimum portion or a minimum amount each year, whether you want to or not, whether you need that money or don't. So yes, on the surface, tax gain harvesting may seem more attractive than Roth conversions. And in many cases, it certainly can be, especially if you have a much larger brokerage account than you do an IRA balance. But in practice, it's not always the case because you can always control the timing of when you do take money, when you do realize gains in your brokerage account, versus you can't fully control the required distribution that you have to take out. I guess one way you can control it is by getting ahead of it through things like Roth conversions or just being strategic about when you take money out of your traditional IRA and other pre-tax retirement accounts. So as Drew is looking at this, or as you are listening to this and saying, yeah, that makes a lot of sense. I've got money in a brokerage account and I have money in IRAs. What should I do? I retire, day one of retirement. What should I prioritize? Tax gain harvesting? Should I prioritize Roth conversions? There's even other tax strategies I'm not even talking about today, just to keep it a little bit simple. But that's the crux of it. Now let's look at Drew's situation specifically. I want to be very careful as I say this. This is not advice. None of this should be intended to or construed as a recommendation. I'm just using this, using the numbers that Drew provided as an example framework. I don't know nearly enough about Drew to actually give recommendations. On top of that, I can never give recommendations on this podcast, so please don't take any of this as a recommendation. So absolutely not advice because I don't know Drew's tax bracket. I don't know his marital status. I don't know his investment mix. I don't know even the gains on his brokerage account. I don't know his risk tolerance. There's many important details that I don't know that to do a full analysis, I would want to have an understanding of. But if I was just given these numbers, here's the framework of how I would think about it. The first thing that I would do is I would kind of start to work backwards, or really I would start from the beginning to say, how do we start understanding which of these tax strategies might be more important, might be in the position that I would say we should prioritize that. Well, I know that Drew needs $110,000 per year for living expenses. That's what he wrote in. I also know that Drew has a pension that covers $11,000 of that. So let's assume that more or less Drew needs about $100,000 after taxes from his investment. Well, his brokerage account today is $300,000. So basic math tells me that represents about 3 years of income. Now, I have no idea, like I said, how his brokerage account is invested. So if it's too aggressive and there's a big market downturn and the market loses a third of its value, well, all of a sudden that $300,000 brokerage account is only worth $200,000. So now all of a sudden it's only worth 2 years of living expenses, not the three that it's currently worth today. So that, along with many other reasons I already mentioned, is one reason this should not be taken as advice. I'm just using really simple numbers here. But another thing I don't know on top of that is his marital status. Well, why is that important? Why does it matter if Drew's married or not? For one, there's a number of reasons, but for one is his standard deduction. So he does not mention a spouse, so I'm going to assume that he's single. If you are single in 2024, your standard deduction is $14,600. It's also assuming you're under the age of 65. If you're married, you can double that. If you're over 65, you also get additional amounts. So I'm using this as an example here. Let's assume for 1 second that Drew has no dividends and no interest from any other spot. No savings account interest, no dividends or interest from his brokerage account. A highly unrealistic example, but I'm just using that to keep this example super basic and super simple so you can start to see the logic or the framework that would be important to work through. So here's what we know. Drew has $11,000 coming in from his pension. I'm not assuming he's taking money from his brokerage account yet. I'm not assuming he's taking money from his traditional IRA yet. That's all we know so far, $11,000 from there. I'm also assuming no dividends or interest from savings or investment accounts. So if none of those other things are generating income, if Drew has no other income outside of his pension, then his taxable income is negative $3,600. Where does that come from? Well, he has a pension of $11,000 remove or subtract the standard deduction, which is $14,600. So when you subtract $14,600 from the $11,000 taxable income that he has coming in from his pension, what that leaves you with is negative $3,600. Again, the reality is there's going to be some interest, there's going to be some dividends, there's going to be some other stuff, but to keep it simple, I'm just ignoring that. Well, with that in mind, does Drew do Roth conversions or does he do tax gain harvesting? Tax gain harvesting, again, there's three tax brackets, 0%, 15%, 20%. And how do we sell just enough from the brokerage account to fill up that 0% bracket before we go into the 15% bracket? That's the mindset there. Well, in this situation, skipping ahead a little bit, based upon what I do know about Drew, here's what I would prioritize first and why. I would prioritize tax gain harvesting for the simple fact that if Drew doesn't do it, if he doesn't sell any of his brokerage account assets, what's he going to live on? If he said, yeah, I really want to prioritize Roth conversions. Well, you can't prioritize Roth conversions if he doesn't first have the $110,000 of living expenses that he can live on, giving him the ability to move money from his IRA to his Roth IRA without actually taking an IRA distribution. So if Drew went through this exercise and he said, great, I have negative $3,600 of taxable income before conversions, I'm going to do a ton of conversions to fill up the 12% or 22% bracket. Drew, that's great on paper, but where's the remaining $100,000 going to come from that you need to live on to supplement your pension? Well, it would need to come either more from the IRA or it would need to come from the brokerage account at that point. And if it all did that, he's either pushing himself into a much higher tax bracket by taking way too much out of his IRA, or he's taking money out of the IRA via Roth conversions, and he's missing out on the opportunity to do tax gain harvesting because he then needs to sell his brokerage account at a gain to free up money to live on. So here's an example of what those numbers might actually look like. So what we do know is that for Drew to get $1 after tax from his traditional IRA, he needs to actually take more than $1, because to get $1 means taxes have already been paid. So what does this look like? Well, if he needs $100,000 of after-tax dollars from his IRA to supplement the $11,000 he's getting from his pension, he'd maybe need around $120,000 pre-tax dollars if he's pulling all of that from his IRA. These are just round estimates. The actual numbers would be different. And also, this is assuming single tax brackets, but he might need around $120,000. So $120,000 withdrawal from his IRA plus $11,000 per year from his pension puts his adjusted gross income at $131,000 before factoring in any interest or dividends or other types of income. Assuming he's single, that puts him in the 24% marginal tax bracket. At that point, Drew's probably not doing a whole lot in Roth conversions. At the 24% marginal tax bracket, the only reason he's moving more from his IRA to his Roth IRA, if he was pretty convinced that he was going to be in a higher tax bracket than the 24% tax bracket in the future. Now, looking at his assets, tough to maybe justify that he might be in the 24% tax bracket. Obviously, a big part of this comes down to what will tax brackets be in the future. And if Drew is absolutely convinced that every single tax bracket is going to double, that's one thing, but if we thought the current tax brackets were going to stay relatively similar, maybe revert back to what they are going to be or projected to be at the end of 2025, maybe tough to justify converting a whole lot more than that. So in other words, as Drew's taking all of his income from his IRA, he's not going to do any tax gain harvesting. So if he had that level of income, he would be in the 15% tax bracket for tax gain harvesting, and he would squeeze out any ability to do any conversions if he wanted to be able to convert below the 24% federal tax bracket. So why do I say all this? Well, I say all this because in certain situations, and this may be one of those situations, now I don't know if Drew has any money in cash he's planning to live on, but he didn't list it in his assets. But in many situations, you need to first realize some gains in order to actually have liquid money to live on that you can then live on while you're doing Roth conversions. So it's usually not an either or, all this or all that type scenario. When someone says, do I do Roth conversions? Do I do tax gain harvesting? In many cases, it can be both. And let's actually look at Drew's situation to illustrate that. I'm going to make some assumptions here to illustrate this. I'm going to make some assumptions that kind of make this example easier for me to show. Drew has $300,000 in a brokerage account. Let's assume that $275,000 of that is cost basis. So of the $300,000, only $25,000 is gains. $275,000 is what Drew originally put in. That's what he used to purchase the investments. Well, what we know from before is if all we're looking at is Drew's pension, and if we're assuming he's single, He has a negative $3,600 taxable income once we just look at the pension and back out the standard deduction. Now, by the way, if Drew is married, then he has an even higher standard deduction. He has an even higher threshold until he starts paying taxes on capital gains and hits certain ordinary income tax brackets. So I'm showing he's single here, but if he's married, then this actually becomes even easier for him to do. So let's work backwards, because here's what we also know. I said there's tax gain harvesting, and if your income's under certain thresholds, you pay 0% taxes on long-term capital gains. It's crucial that you understand that's only long-term capital gains. Short-term capital gains are taxed at ordinary income rates. Well, the threshold for 2024 to bump into the 15% tax bracket for federal long-term capital gains is $47,025. Once your income exceeds that, you now are in the 15% tax brackets for capital gains. So what that tells us is that becomes our target. $47,025, that's our target to say we don't want our taxable income, not our adjusted gross income, but our taxable income, which is really our adjusted gross income minus deductions. If we can keep that to $47,025 or lower, then we're not going to pay any federal taxes on long-term capital gains. Could be some state taxes, but at the federal level, we're not going to pay that. So here's what that tells us is if $47,025 is the target, and we know that Drew has $25,000 of long-term capital gains, what that means is other income sources. He can have other taxable income of $22,025 until he moves or before he starts to move into the 15% federal long-term capital gain tax bracket. That sounded a little confusing to me, so it probably sounded a little confusing to you. Let me make sure I just said that clearly. If we subtract $25,000, which is how much Drew has in long-term capital gains in his brokerage account, again, that's my assumption. Drew didn't tell me that. I'm just making that up. $25,000 in long-term capital gains. Subtract that from $47,025. That leaves us with $22,025. Or in other words, Drew, all of your other income, all your non-long-term capital gain income can add up to $22,025. That's what your taxable income can be, while still allowing you to realize $25,000 of long-term capital gains and not move into the 15% tax bracket. The question is, what do we use to make that income up of? Well, he could pull money out of his IRA and that could count as income. Or, and this might be a better option, maybe he converts money from his IRA to his Roth IRA instead, and that might be a better option in this case. So now we can solve for how much money could Drew convert from his IRA to his Roth IRA, and we don't want that combined amount to exceed $22,025. So if before doing any of this, we know that Drew's taxable income was negative $3,600, which again was his pension of $11,000 minus his standard deduction, what we want to know is what's the difference between negative $3,600 and $22,025. And the answer is $25,635. What does that mean? I know this is kind of confusing. A lot of numbers being thrown out. Drew, in this example, could convert $25,635 from his traditional IRA to his Roth IRA while simultaneously selling his brokerage account, liquidating his brokerage account, and realizing gains of $25,000, assuming those are long-term capital gains, and not pay any long-term gains on that sale. So what has Drew done here? Well, he's kind of gotten the best of both worlds. He's been able to sell all of his brokerage account and realize zero gains, or I should say pay taxes at a 0% rate on all those gains. And he's been able to convert a little over $25,000 from his IRA to his Roth IRA. Now, what's the reality? The reality is Drew probably has more than $25,000 of long-term capital gains in his account. He probably has that because he's probably not asking this question if he's not worried about the tax implications of the gains there. So for example, maybe of that $300,000, $100,000 is gains and $200,000 is what he originally put in. If that was the case, then he might need to spread out those gains over a couple of years in order to pay taxes at the 0% rate and probably wouldn't be able to do any Roth conversions on top of that. And then again, on top of that, just to make sure it is abundantly clear, I am purposefully excluding dividends, interest, other income sources, just to make this simple enough to go over on a podcast. I think it's already confusing enough with some of these numbers. If you start adding those other things in, it's just going to become a mess to try to listen to and make any sense of this. So for situations like Drew, just as we start to wrap up his specific situation, again, this is not advice, but the first place my mind goes to is we might need to start with some tax gain harvesting to free up enough cash to live on that will then allow us to implement Roth conversions. That's one option. Now, all of you, with the exception of Drew, are, of course, not Drew, which means all of you have your own unique situations. And while this might be helpful to go through, you might be wondering, what are the general principles we can take away from this? Your situation is different. You're going to have different amounts in your IRA. You're going to have different amounts in your brokerage account. You're going to have differing situations in terms of marital status, in terms of what you want to live on, in terms of other income sources like Social Security or pension. So what should you know as general principles? Well, for one, and this isn't really what I would call a general principle as much as just something that's probably going to come up as you're trying to do this, is understand that your standard deduction or your itemized deduction, but just your deduction, it's going to offset ordinary income first before it starts to offset long-term capital gains. Or in other words, your long-term capital gains are going to stack on top of whatever ordinary income you have. Not a principle here, but just keep that in mind. As you're looking at your situation, you're going to start wondering, wait a minute, if I have both capital gains and I have ordinary income and I have this deduction, what am I applying that deduction against? Well, it's going to offset your ordinary income first before offsetting any long-term capital gains. Next, and really I would call this the first principle, where I would want to start is start with an understanding of how much of an issue will your required minimum distribution be. If you remember at the beginning why I walked through this and said, well, what's the benefit of tax gain harvesting as a percentage versus what's the benefit of Roth conversions as a percentage? And it seems like tax gain harvesting is significantly superior in terms of, wow, I could save 15% taxes if I sell gains in the right year versus Roth conversions, which have a maybe lower marginal difference. Very true. But as I mentioned, the challenge with IRAs and looking at that as a simple comparison is with IRAs, you're going to be forced to start taking distributions, whereas you're not going to have that same thing happen with your brokerage account. So because of that, where I would start is if you're looking at this and saying, what do I prioritize first? Trying to do some tax gain harvesting, sell gains at a lower rate, or doing Roth conversions, start first and foremost by understanding to what extent are required minimum distributions going to be an issue. And I know being an issue is vague. What I mean by that is to what extent are these required distributions in the future going to push you into a higher tax bracket than you otherwise would have been in? And the goal is not to be in a 0% tax bracket in the future. If you could be in a 0% tax bracket in the future without putting yourself in a huge tax bracket today, that's fine. But in most cases, you're not going to be in a 0% tax bracket in the future without doing some really serious conversions today, without overpaying in taxes today, in which case you probably end up paying more in lifetime taxes than you needed to. So the goal is not saying, how do I get rid of my IRA for the future and convert all to Roth? The goal is not even to say, how can I stay in a 0% tax bracket in the future? It's to say, how can I stay in a tax bracket that's not pushing me too significantly higher to the other tax brackets that I don't need to be in, but I'm forced to be in because of these required distributions? Once you've done that, the next thing I would do is this. Let's, for example, say you've identified that required distributions will be an issue. You project out what your IRA balance will be, you project out what you might be forced to take, and you say, oh my gosh, I'm gonna be forced to take out $150,000 more in the future than I'm gonna need to. That's gonna bump me a couple tax brackets. That is definitely an issue. I need to do some Roth conversions today. Well, then the next thing you need to do is you need to determine how much do you need to convert to offset that tax liability. Now, I'm gonna make this overly simplistic. So as you're listening to this right now, understand this is almost an embarrassingly simplistic way of looking at it, but I just wanna convey a general principle. Let's assume that you've said, yes, required distributions are going to be an issue. The next step is to say, how much do you need to convert to eliminate some of that issue or just to negate some of that issue? Assume you have simple numbers. Assume you have $1 million in an IRA and you say, okay, you know what? I've determined I need to convert $400,000 to ensure that this is not an issue. Again, overly simplistic because there's so many other variables here. But you've determined that if you can convert $400,000 from your IRAs to your Roth IRAs before required distributions start, then you're going to be okay. Okay, that's good. We're not done yet. The final step is to understand how wide is your tax planning window. Your tax planning window is typically the time from when you retire to the time when Social Security and/or required minimum distributions kick in. So imagine you retire at 62. Now, this is assuming you have cash or brokerage account assets to live on. You could keep your taxable income super low. Even if you're spending 100 grand, 150 grand, 200 grand a year, that's all coming from cash or all coming from a brokerage account, you're going to be in a relatively low tax bracket. until Social Security kicks in the future and required minimum distributions stack on top of that. So you can almost imagine, if you look at your taxable income, if you're watching this on YouTube, you'll see, but your taxable income's up here, then you retire and it drops, and you're still spending a similar amount or a good amount, but you're not paying taxes on that until Social Security kicks in, and then until required distributions kick in. In that period between the time that you retire and the time that required distributions kick in, that's the tax planning window. That's when your income is much lower and you have the ability to do things like Roth conversions without pushing yourself into a much higher tax bracket. Well, let's look at that. Let's assume that you have a very short tax planning window because you retire at 69 and next year Social Security kicks in and then the 3 years required distributions kick in. So if you have $400,000 that you need to convert before age 73, you've only got 4 years to make that happen. You really need to prioritize making that happen because you've got a short window to do so. Now let's assume all else is equal, but you retire at age 60. And on top of retiring at age 60, you've got a bunch of cash and brokerage assets that you can fully live on. That can allow you to get a long way into the future before you run out of cash or brokerage assets. Well, if you still have that same $400,000 that you need to live on, you can spread that out over a much longer period of time. You don't need to get that all converted in a period of, say, 3-4 short years. You are going to have longer to convert that. One, because you're younger, but two, because your required minimum distribution age isn't until age 75. So you've got this much larger window, which means you don't need to have to be as on it every single year. You don't have to convert giant amounts from your IRA to your Roth IRA each year. You can do much smaller amounts, which also means you can more easily prioritize things like tax gain harvesting because you can do both. You're not being forced to choose one or the other. You might be able to use some years to prioritize tax gain harvesting. You might use other years to prioritize Roth conversions. Or you might just do a combination each year, depending upon what the makeup of your portfolio looks like. Now, this isn't how it works in reality. I said, okay, well, determine how much you need to convert from your IRA to your Roth IRA to negate some of the issue. The reality is the longer that you take to convert those assets, so in that second example, or maybe you have 10, 15 years to do so, well, the longer those assets remain in the IRA, the more they're going to grow, which means that probably the more that you need to convert. So there's all these almost conflicting variables here, but this is where at least having an understanding of what you need to do is really important. So general principles, number one, understand how much of an issue required distributions will be. Number two, understand what you need to do to alleviate that issue. Number three, understand the time frame that you have to do that. And once you have an understanding of that, then you can work backwards to say, okay, I know what I need to do. I know how long I need to do it. I can then start projecting out what will my various tax brackets be and how can I now start to prioritize tax gain harvesting versus Roth conversions versus any other tax strategies that potentially enter the picture. So as we now start to wrap that up, if you're still with me, I know that was kind of dense with actual numbers. Sometimes I like to speak more high level, but sometimes having actual numbers is more helpful to illustrate that. If you're still with me, thank you very much for listening. I hope that was helpful as we explored Drew's situation, just as a hypothetical, but then tried to extract some general principles for anyone to use. If this has been helpful and you're watching on YouTube, I'd really appreciate it if you hit the subscribe button and also if you left a thumbs up for the video and a comment if this has been helpful or letting me know what you'd like to see on future videos. If you're listening on Spotify or Apple Podcasts, if you could leave a review, that'd be really helpful just in terms of letting more people find the show to get the information they're looking for to create that more secure retirement. And for those of you who have been listening and been listening for a while, thank you. Thank you for supporting the show. It's really fun to get notes from you all, comments, feedback. Really appreciate you taking the time to do so. That is all I have for today, and I'll see you next time. Hey, everyone. It's me again for the disclaimer. Please be smart about this. Before doing anything, please be sure to consult with your tax planner or financial planner. Nothing in this podcast should be construed as investment, tax, legal, or other financial advice. It is for informational purposes only. Thank you for listening to another episode of the Ready for Retirement podcast. If you want to see how Root Financial can help you implement the techniques I discuss in this podcast, then go to rootfinancialpartners.com and click Start Here, where you can schedule a call with one of our advisors. We work with clients all over the country, and we love the opportunity to speak with you about your goals and how we might be able to help. And please remember, nothing we discuss in this podcast is intended to serve as advice. You should always consult a financial, legal, or tax professional who's familiar with your unique circumstances before making any financial decisions.